teleology or speleology, I actually don't even know.
What does that word mean?
Speleology or speleology is the scientific study of caves and underground spaces. It's the same root as the word spelunking.
And by the way, this is at the Warehouse Gallery in Syracuse, Maine.
Yes.
So right now, it's three kind of areas that are connected together.
Yeah. Yep. So it's kind of, the show is really one piece that's presented in three parts, just according to the architecture of the gallery. So there's the main gallery, which is a very large space. There's a small room in the back, and there's a third section, which is in the windows in the front of the building, which I created with Mike McAllister, the window part specifically.
There's sort of these relational elements of the audio to the visual and processing behind it. And I know that you have used kind of generative procedures to compose it. Is that correct? Could you explain what that means? What does it mean to design a generative process?
Generative work is any kind of work that is created as you experience it, just according to a set of rules. Like John Cage was doing some experiments in the 50s with, he called it non-deterministic operations, where they would flip coins and consult the I Ching at different modes of performance, and so random decisions would get made in the midst of a performance by some performers. And then in the 70s and 80s, Brian Eno was beginning to use some of those same ideas with mechanical and electronic processes. He actually coined the term generative music for a piece of music that where you kind of build the system that will create the music, but that system contains a certain amount of randomness, or it follows its own rules. So really, your role as an artist is to create the instrument and create the system, turn it on, and then the instrument or the system itself kind of takes it from there. To me, when I'm doing installation work, that's really interesting, to create a system that will evolve and make random changes and not repeat itself. That's more interesting to me than, for example, making a two-hour video that would just loop over and over for 3 months. In fact, that idea kind of makes me sick, the idea that I could have made a piece of sound that was only 5 or 6 minutes long and had it play and repeat for 3 months. And thinking of the poor attendants who have to work in the gallery and listen to that loop. So I find it interesting to make works that will evolve and change themselves. And so this work has tons and tons of randomness built into it. And so the key that it's in, the tempos, the images, the melodic forms are all changing. And it's a non-repeating sort of real-time creative process.
Can you talk specifically, like, in developing this work, like, how do you make those decisions, like, what will be the core elements or pieces that will be fed into the system, and when, how do you kind of balance randomness with maybe logic or other sorts of forms of system making?
It is, my background is in music and improvisation, and my process is very improvisatory. I think I have a basic idea of, I don't know, the vague structure, but then within that, the specific decisions only get made by actually working with the materials. So I knew that when I was going to make a piece for this gallery, I was going to have a massive amount of space, and that I was going to use projections of video from everyday life to fill that space visually. So that was a starting point for me. I spent about a year traveling around with a camera and a microphone, and everywhere I went where I just saw a scenario that was suggestive to me in lots of different ways, I would just film it for about 5 or 10 minutes. And so part of how I started working on this was using these images and sound recordings that go with those images and mining them for musical possibilities as well as cinematic possibilities, which cinematic I would use in the most abstract possible sense of the word, but the way you can create visual narratives or interesting visual sequences by re-editing those footages. So it was a very exploratory process.
The two projections, they're like beautifully mundane images, but then the sound is sort of magical. And you have these LEDs that are kind of stars or something, like fairy dust or something. So I'm wondering, there's sort of like this kind of the sense of wonder and the sense of everyday within the work.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a combination of like completely mundane elements with completely like spastic treatments to those elements, and then a certain sort of magical. Into this sort of new media, multimedia artwork through music. And when I went to grad school, what I was really interested in doing was developing new electronic systems for music performance. And before I had done that, I would always just use the tools that were, you know, available commercially that you could get in a music shop. And when I began building my own systems for music performance, and just developing those skills, it immediately a lot of visual possibilities introduced themselves. If you're creating an instrument that was creating random sequences of sound, it was fairly simple to add on a branch of that that would visualize those sounds with, like, for example, LEDs or video projections or a robotics that could actually perform acoustic sounds in times with your sequences. And it just seemed to me that it was foolish to limit yourself to only electronic sound when you're creating these systems and those possibilities are there. So I began to, I don't know, my ideas became very messy and lots of doors started to open. And then I, before I knew it, was developing video works and works that were dealing with light and physical things like robotics. My process is very much musical. I kind of think of myself still as a musician, but at this point, the work I'm making, when you look at it, it's not music anymore. But to me, it's sort of a lot of musical ideas that got spilled out into other sensory modes.
Can you talk in Tech Geek Talk for us a little bit about how do you actually build this? Like, how is this made? What kind of computer programming are you using? What kind of physical computing are you using?
Yeah. Most of the software that's driving this show is all developed in a platform called MaximSP Jitter, which is a graphical programming environment that's fairly widely adopted by a sort of electronic art community. And it's a graphical programming environment, so rather than, it's not really like learning a language the way people think about computer programming as someone who's writing sentences. It's more like you're creating diagrams where you're creating little flow charts. So sounds will pass through a chart that you create, or images can pass through different processes. There are four computers running this show. Each of them is running a unique MaximSP Jitter patch, which is a program I made in MaximSP Jitter. And those four computers are on a network with each other. And that kind of allows me to distribute the workload that's going into this show, because the amount of video that's in this show, there's five channels of high definition video, the amount of sound, there's nine channels of sound, they're being processed in real time, there's something like 180 LEDs that are being controlled. No one computer could actually do that, but by breaking it down into four or five different tasks, and putting them on unique computers and then just using the local area network to control timing, I was able to do that. So one of the computers is the sort of conductor that's sending cues to all the others, and then the others will respond by projecting a new image or creating a new sound or activating an LED. And in that way, you can kind of create an environment that is very much operating as one thing. So the sound is immediately connected to an image, which is immediately connected to a robotic gesture, and yet it is running on many different computers in many different places. So that's the software side of it. For the physical computing, like, for example, there's a bunch of robotics in the window, which I created with Mike McAllister, a great industrial designer. We're controlling the robotics with a Arduino board, which is a open source physical computing platform, which is also fairly well adopted by the art community, as well as just engineers, hobbyists, tinkerers, hackers. And because it's open source, it has a really...
Can you explain what open source
means? Open source basically means that the intellectual property underlying this project is not owned by any one person. It can't be used for commercial applications, and it can be modified by anyone, which is a huge movement within software and technology, is that the idea of, by decentralizing ownership of these ideas, the technology can advance way faster and in a more robust way than a commercial tool can, where they maybe only have 12 employees working on the code and adding, fixing problems, adding features, whereas an open source project could have, you know, 1,000 people all actively developing it. Anyone who wants to work on it can. But then, of course, the flip side of that coin is that anyone who's going to screw it up with a problem or screw it up by not being responsible for their work also can do that. So it's an interesting debate. So Arduino is a totally open source project. You can build your own Arduino board using the schematics that they develop for free, and it's very inexpensive.
And the Arduino is a piece of hardware that is like an interface between the computer and sensors or things that the computer is controlling or receiving input from.
Yeah, that's one of the ways it can be used. So the Arduino board itself is about the size of a deck of cards, and it basically is a very small computer. It has its own little processor. It has a little bit of memory. It has some input and output pins. So it's like this incredibly tiny, very simple computer that you can program in a fairly easy-to-learn language that's based on Wiring is the name of the programming language it's based on. So it can run on its own. You can put a little program on it that would control 12 different robotic arms, and then all you would have to do is power it up off of batteries or something, and it could just do that on its own. Or the way I'm using it in this show is you can use it as an interface between things in the real world and your computer. So you can use your computer to control robotics, or you could use your computer to sense the amount of light in a room and then do something different when it becomes dark, or to sense, use distance sensors or bend sensors or accelerometers. And in this way, you can create software that's responding to real-world events using the Arduino as that interface between your computer and sensors and actuators.
So in the window, what was your collaboration with Mike McAllister? How did you work together, and how did you kind of develop that, the window piece? And it almost looks like a piano, kind of like a drumming on the window. And
Mike was great. I had this idea that we could somehow use the windows as a sort of musical instrument of themselves, somehow transform them into sound objects. And I had done some early experiments with glass resonators, which are also being used, but these windows on the front of this building, I gotta say, are just incredibly thick. They're double pane, like hurricane proof monsters. And my glass resonators were just not producing enough sound, and I was like, well, I just need to start attacking these windows with something that'll produce an appreciable amount of sound. So I, and while I have like the understanding of how the electronics to control a robotic element works. I don't have that kind of sculptural expertise about how to actually build a axis around which an arm can rotate. And so Mike McAllister is an industrial designer and has done amazing things. I mean, from designing just everyday objects that you take for granted, like a desk lamp. Like a desk lamp has 36 different moving parts inside of it, and you don't even think about how perfectly designed it is, but he does things like that. And so I kind of gave him the idea, and then he really took that idea and turned it into this visual piece of art. So like you said, it's actually a very striking method that he created for controlling those robotics, where there's these very long lines that actually run up to a little rotating pivot, and then the arm rotates around that pivot. And Mike designed that. He's using the lines kind of to create a line drawing. And these were totally like his ideas that he brought to the table. So it really did turn into an artistic collaboration where he was very much creating a visual piece of artwork that was expressing these musical ideas.
I think there's a tendency to anthropomorphize technology, but at the same time, it feels like a living system, so it is a little uncanny, and you're kind of giving control over to this machine, in a sense. And I'm wondering, the other thing would be to be more instrumental, like, I'm making this tool do what I want, but it seems like maybe there's some back and forth between you and the technology you use.
Yeah, it's definitely, like, this show especially is, like, because it has so much autonomy, it makes its own decisions, and all I can do is kind of create the parameters inside of which it's doing that. So it's really, it's like raising a teenager. It's like, during the 2 weeks of time that I was installing the show here in the gallery, I spent as much time as I could being in the gallery, running the system, and like noticing, okay, that's too loud. That's not interesting. That's really beautiful. And kind of like reinforcing the aspects of it that I thought were working well and trying to prevent the things that I was less interested in. And after about 2 weeks, I kind of like, I got to this place where it, first of all, it became very complex. So it's, I almost don't even understand what's going on a like line by line, moment by moment basis anymore. And second of all, it reached this point where I was generally pretty happy with the way it was behaving, but and then after 2 weeks, the show opened to the public. So it's like, you know, like raised this kid as best as I could, and then you just let him go in the world, and nobody does right by you. So.
It also has to be like there's all these modules and like infinite combinations. So there must be some unexpected or new forms that you know that. It's out of your hands how that came together, but just kind of, for you, it must be this experience of kind of getting feedback from the system that you gave birth to, I guess, or raised, in a sense.
Yeah, no, it is really fun to come back to it. Throughout the 3 months that the show has been up, I've been in here once a week or so. And just not knowing what's about to happen is really interesting. And sometimes it'll be creating things that I didn't expect and I'm thrilled with. And then there's been a couple times where like I showed up and there was a bunch of people here and it was just being really boring. And I was like, little bastard. Why don't you entertain these people? So it's really fun. It's, like I said, much more interesting to me than just coming back to a piece that's repeating itself over and over. And I don't know, I think it's going to probably inform the next piece I do, because experiencing it over the course of 3 months is totally different than experiencing it just during the 2 weeks when I was kind of creating it or even just experiencing it during a 10-minute visit that you might get if you were someone passing through the gallery.
Could we talk about some of your other various activities for a little bit? Like, most artists, you do a lot of different things.
Yeah.
I know you do compose music that you just listen to, like, as a CD track or something. Mm-hmm. You DJ. I know you do some industrial work, too. But I'm more interested in, could you talk a little bit about your compositional work as a musician?
Yeah. I began working with electronics to create music pretty young. I got my first synthesizer when I was 12, and my family had a little home computer, and I figured out how to connect the synthesizer to the computer, and that was like this incredible moment for me, where I was realizing what I could do with just those two things, like the intricate patterns and specific ideas you could come up with these sort of electronic systems. And so since I was really young, that was pretty much all I was focused on, was like creating musical works with electronic systems. But also, I didn't have a tremendous exposure to avant-garde ideas until college or even grad school in some ways. And so I think a lot of my early work was focused on creating music that you could listen to on a CD, which I still do to this day. In fact, I have three or four records that are coming out this year, and they're regular stereo recordings you can put on your iPod or put on a record player and listen to. I've created lots of work that's just, straight up records, like two-channel stereo sound recordings, and I find that incredibly rewarding. There's this like huge tradition of artists and musicians making records. And there's also like an interesting tradition of musicians just going to a club and doing a two-channel stereo sound performance. And so I do work in those areas, and I've done lots of work as a DJ, and I'm really interested in dance music. I find it really interesting and enjoyable. On the other hand, I do see like those fields as very limiting. I think it's a good, for me, it's good to do that as an exercise, where you're being very, very conscious of the fact that, okay, now I'm making a two-channel piece of sound, it's loop-based electronic music, but then realizing the limitations that are inside those ideas, because limiting, as a musician, limiting yourself to only two channels of sound is kind of, I think, a crazy thing to do, and it's the only reason people create so many stereo recordings of music is because that's what the commercially produced tools are designed for. So when you get Pro Tools or a tape recorder or an effects processor, all these commercially produced devices are just presuming that you're going to follow the industry standard of working with two channels of sound. And I think when you can get your head out of that idea and start thinking about building your own tools or misusing those tools in different ways to kind of break away from the built-in ideas of that technology, a lot of interesting things can happen. So I like to indulge myself by just making the kind of music that commercial tools are designed for, and then take a huge step away from that by creating works that are basically impossible to make with commercial tools as they're intended to be used.
So there is a relationship with an instrument, but it seems like your instrument has always been kind of these machines and computers and processes.
Yeah. I've always been a tremendously ungifted performer of music instruments. I was studying piano for 6 years, and I do not have a lot of talent. And when I was in college, actually, the worst grade I got was one semester when I took pipe organ. I got a fucking B minus in pipe organ. So,
you're not going to be Bach then, I guess.
No. But then on the other hand, like, I was, from a very young age, beginning to experiment with the idea of electronic performance, where it's my interface with, like, what's happening real time is not, it's not sort of one-to-one in that traditional way that a piano is, where when you press a button on a piano, a hammer strikes a certain string. But the way that I was performing electronically was I'd press a button, and rather than that button creating a specific sound, it would change the kind of general state of the music I was in. And this was something that it turned out I seemed to be pretty good at. And so the way I perform is, to me, it's not the same as like a virtuosic violinist who has incredibly refined motor skills. It's more like I, from show to show, I'm creating different systems that will, the entire sort of infrastructure of sound is going to be different from show to show, and the way that I change the way those sounds operate is the performance itself. So it's different than traditional instrumental performance, but there is still a very real-time performative process. You have to actually be there to change the systems as they operate, and the way you change them is influenced by the audience and by the other people you're performing with. So it's a kind of combination of a lot of like very basic traditional elements of performance, and then a more modern or technological approach to producing sound.
What's next for you?
The next thing I'm doing is I'm going to go around with the Merce Cunningham Dance Company, and I will be the music coordinator for a whole bunch of shows they're doing, which is really exciting because they're the pieces that they perform with are just amazing masterworks of 20th and 21st century music. There's a new Jesse Styles record that just came out called the Target Museum, from Specific Recordings. It's a beautiful 12-inch picture disc. And there are two or three other records that will be coming out later this year, and that will all be on my website when those.
And what's your URL?
It's jts3k.com. One last thing about Automatic Speleology is that we'll be closing the exhibition with a performance on Saturday, May 29th, and I will be performing with Curtis Bond, who is an amazing virtuosic player of lots of different string instruments, but he's going to be performing sitar and dilruba, which are classical Indian instruments, and Curtis is also master electronic musician. He was actually my mentor during a very critical phase of my development. So it's I'm really excited to play with him, and it should be a tremendous performance. And so that's at 7 p.m. at the Warehouse Gallery on Saturday, May 29th.
Well, thanks a lot for talking with me today, Jesse.
Thank you.